Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for September 9th. I'm John Gibson in Denver. And with me via the internet is Jim Allen from Tokyo. How you doing?
You know, you'd think the connection would be worse to Denver, but it's not bad, you know. So, no, I'm here in Tokyo, and we're bracing for a typhoon that's set to strike about the time this podcast is released, so.
Oh, my wife said maybe about 3 a.m., so probably about the time I'm editing. 3 a.m.
Well,
your time.
Okay, well, you manage the typhoon editing details, and I'll just worry about baseball.
I will try to edit that typhoon away from our area. How's that?
Well, it ain't going to hit Denver, so don't worry.
I'm talking about our area in Tokyo.
I'm thinking about you, man.
I'm putting you before me.
I know you are. I know. Putting me first. You're putting the team first. Okay, well, we'll hear more of that today.
All right. On this week's show, we've got a great show, I think, for you. We got a lot of material. We've got a chat with Ruby De La Rosa of Yomiuri. We're going to talk about the Giants. We're going to look at the playoff races. We have a Wild Wild Westy segment and a lot more to go with some high heat. So let's start swinging so we can finish.
Clearing the bases!
Okay. Well, recently I was out at Tokyo Dome and had a chance finally to catch up with Ruby De La Rosa. The Yomiuri Giants new, I guess he's a closer. We haven't seen him a lot closing, but late relief guy.
Late inning reliever, I'll go with that.
Okay, late inning reliever, and he's a very joyful guy and very positive. And I forgot to thank him for giving the interview in English, because it's not easy for him. And it was really delightful. He's just a fun guy to talk to. And he kind of warms up, you know, as you hear. I think he made my English worse.
That's what was happening.
Like subconscious.
But for some reason, like, he didn't make your Spanish better.
Well, I can't make any. I don't make anything better. I'm not one of those team players. You know, that's his. And so we talked about different things. But he's had moderate success. He gave up a home run that cost the Giants a game early on in his time here. But he seems to have settled in and is really enjoying the heck out of being here. So let's just have a listen to our chat.
Okay, our guest this week on the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast is new Yomiuri Giants reliever Ruby De La Rosa. Did I say that okay?
Yes.
Close enough.
Yeah, it's good, it's good.
So thank you for joining us.
Thank you for asking me that.
Oh, no, it's our pleasure. Now, tell us a little bit the path to come to Japan, because you were with the Diamondbacks.
Yeah.
This at the start of the spring.
Yeah, baseball is crazy.
Okay.
So you don't even know where the next step.
Okay.
Just the sooner you know it, it's maybe second before it happened. I don't even have no idea I'd be here at this point. So I'm here.
But you were telling me that Onelki Garcia with Hanshin is a friend of yours.
So yeah, he's one of my best friends. So we know each other a long time.
Okay.
And we and him talked a lot last year.
Okay.
When he got back to the state and see how is everything here. And he liked it, though.
Uh-huh.
The only thing he didn't like is spring training. It's so tough. Well, he's fighting, though. He was there and tried to put the best in him. And he's keep here. So he's now here again.
Well, he had a really good year last year.
Yeah, I mean, he's a good guy. He likes to work hard.
Mm-hmm.
And we spoke a lot.
That's essential in Japan. If you don't like to work hard, maybe
you're not allowed to be here, though.
They take away your visa, maybe.
Yep.
Okay. Now, you had to adjust to baseball in Japan, but I think that's compared to adjusting from as a 19-year-old from the Dominican to baseball in America was much harder.
Actually, not. It was harder before.
Yeah, I think so. When you were 19,
yeah,
maybe it was harder
before. Now with little veteran promotions to talk about and just follow the rules.
Okay.
Be yourself and try not be in trouble.
Okay.
Promotion. Enjoy what you love to do. So I love to play baseball and to join everywhere I play.
What's so far? What do you enjoy about playing baseball in Japan? Because this is a little different the way that you know. Because they had Alex Guerrero bunting the other day. Maybe never.
Yeah,
seen
I love the fun here.
Oh.
The fun is crazy here. So I love the energy.
Yeah.
I love the cool house. It's unbelievable. Everybody's together. And that's something special, everything here in Japan have. Mm. It doesn't matter if we won, we win, we're still the same guys, still the same person. We're all together.
Okay. Now, also, I have never been to the Dominican, but I understand also the crowds are very lively. A lot of energy.
Yeah, it's kind of the same. Kind of the same. I just played one year in Dominican my whole career. It's pretty much the same. It's loud. It's fun to be in the field with the crowd like that.
So here is a little bit not like the majors. So if you can get excited here and people don't get angry with you on the field.
Yeah, that's the best thing. That you can do bad and then don't even care.
Okay.
And so there's a lot of confidence we make for us. Because we do bad today, but tomorrow we try to do the best. And that's the best thing. In America, you do bad, the crowd start talking a lot of bad things about you. And here, I don't see that too many times.
But also here, if you do well, you can show your excitement on the field.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah,
the veterans
yeah.
don't say, hey, shut up, you.
Yeah, here, it's another word, another business. Yeah, you did good, like you're saying. Everybody love you, also the crowd, the teammates, your coaches. Everything. Everybody love you pretty much.
Now you had a rough start. One of your first games gave a big home run.
Yeah, but something happened again.
Yeah.
So.
But everybody. But after that.
Everybody was okay. You got an Einstein. Just something happened. Like not even here. Everywhere. Just one pitch, and game over. Pretty much.
Okay.
Well, we keep through it, and the next day we're working hard and try to not happen again.
And the teammates are very supportive here.
Oh, yeah. The team is unbelievable, like I say. And the team always in my back. So try to support me, try to give me that confidence, and try to make myself to be the best in the mountain in my time.
Okay, now I want to ask you about how you've grown. Now, how different are you from that 17-year-old kid starting in the Dominican Summer League from now?
Yeah, it's way, way different. So I can tell my body's thinking is way better. And how I take the thing, like the bad thing, the good thing, I take it the good way. But then it was tough.
Right.
I never played professional baseball player. And now I'm here like 12 years, almost 13 years pro. And I take it a different way. Like, it doesn't matter if doing good or doing bad, try to keep the same guy.
Mm-hmm. Now, in what ways have you grown? What way are you maybe a smarter pitcher?
In everything. Smarter pitcher and be a good teammate and support more my family, be more part of the team, care about my team pretty much. And
It's hard when you're young because, one, you're young.
Yeah,
well, you're not so mature.
Yeah, but now we think different though.
Okay,
you get pretty much everything now. We work smarter. And the mound, and the field, off the field, and the gym everywhere. Try to be the better every single day.
Okay, now as far as the pitches you throw, has it changed? Because you used to throw really, really, really hard.
It doesn't change at all though.
It's still, you know, still just, even after the Tommy John, your velocity is pretty good.
Yes, still the same. Just a little smart.
Okay.
At this point.
Now, usually in Japan, a lot of the players come here and they get better. I mean, they get better in Japan.
For
many different reasons. It's an individual thing. Have you learned anything about how, especially, you know, I ask the same pitchers the same question, especially left-handed hitters who are just trying to cut that ball foul or...
Yeah, we learn baseball every day.
Okay.
So different thing every single day.
Hmm.
But here, actually for the, as you said, lefty hitters, the last pretty much sloppy hitters.
Yeah.
So when we're taking the right way, it's not that hard to put it out. And just taking the good way, okay, that lefty not going to give me be damaged. I'm not going to be playing around. Just let me attack him and see what happens.
Okay. So let not just maybe more pitch to contact with those guys?
Yeah, because they're not giving any big damage though.
Okay.
And just let me throw right attack them.
Yeah, because a lot of guys who are thinking, a lot of the pitchers come here tell me, I'm trying to strike this guy out, but he's not taking big cuts, so it's really hard. And it frustrates them, and they have 14, 15 pitch at bats.
Yeah, but I don't try to strike them on nobody.
Just go straight.
I just want to attack them and be out of my inning and let them pitches.
Okay, so efficiency.
Exactly.
Be efficient.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, well, thank you very much for joining us.
And thank you.
Wish you good success here in Japan.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, Mr. De La Rosa, thank you very much for joining us and look forward to seeing you at Tokyo Dome again.
Certainly appreciate the time, and thank you very much again, like Jim said, for doing the chat in English, which his English is really good. I was really impressed.
It was passable, yeah. I mean, he said some things, and what would you, or anything you'd like to comment on, or anything?
Well, yes, again, I keep saying this every week, and then we go on and on and on, but two quick things. I love the phrase baseball.
Two quick things.
From
Small Acorns' long podcast do evolve.
True. But I'll try to keep them in my pocket.
Okay.
So the phrase baseball is crazy, I think I'm going to be using that a lot. And a lot of us, I think when we watch games, we think we know what's going to happen. For example, the bases are loaded and there's no one out, and we think, okay, there's going to be some runs scored in this inning, at least one, or, depending on what team you root for, you look pessimistically, well, they've loaded the bases with no one out, but nobody's going to come across that plate and score
exactly.
a run. But we think we know what's going to happen, and for him to say baseball is crazy, while we as observers jump to conclusions, I really like the phrase, and I think I'm going to try to insert it as much as I can as we go through the show, because some crazy things happened as soon as I took this flight to Denver, including this no-hitter that Mr. Kodai Senga decided to throw while I was, 30,000 or 40,000 feet at times in the air. Anyway, and then...
Well, actually, the game started at 6 p.m., and I think... at the start of the game, at the start of every NPB game, the umpire will look back to the press box.
For the official starting time?
No, because he'll get the signal that the official scorers are ready to go.
I see.
And the official scorers will give them the Yoshihiro Maru sign.
Symbol, okay.
And then he'll raise their arms in a circle over their heads. And then the umpire will say, play ball. So actually, but we had another sign going on, which was at the start of the game, you'll see Taki Akai, I think it's about the second inning, and he looks back to one of our former Yomiuri colleagues, and he gives the sign that John Gibson has now left the building. Time for the no-hitter.
Yeah, my flight was scheduled to leave at 6:10 on Friday, and we took off on time. So I was literally in the air as he was throwing most of those pitches, the majority of those pitches. But anyway, getting back on track, I think the Giants, they looked well on their way to winning the CL title, and then they had a six-game skid. And, of course, that's another thing about crazy or baseball being crazy, because it just seemed like they were on their way. And just like that, things kind of turned around. Now, I'm not saying they're going to lose or they're in a bad shape, because they did stop that skid. But just like you said, baseball is crazy. And I love what he talked about in terms of, even though he's a professional, he says, we learn something in baseball every day. And I think that's important. It's something that we can all take away from this chat, because we all have at least the opportunity to learn something. By watching, we can learn something by listening to certain announcers and certain color people who are describing what's going on in the action, but I wouldn't say all of them. But a lot of times there's something that can be taken away or learned or gained from watching these games. It's just that we have to be willing and able to absorb it. And I think, if the pros who get paid to do the game or to play the game every day can learn something every day, certainly we as observers, fans, media included, have the opportunity to do the same. So I really like those aspects of what he talked about. What about you?
Well, I think my brief comment is you have to be willing to change your belief system to some degree. You have to make yourself a little vulnerable in order to learn things, because if you come in thinking this is the way it is and you see something that contradicts it, and you're not willing to accept the fact that you could be wrong or that your belief system needs to be modified, then...
Modified, yes. Yes, yes.
So anyway, the couple of things really I really enjoyed. And his, you know, I wanted to talk about his growth as a pitcher, because he's gone through all, he's been with different teams, and he's gone
started
through
a couple with the Dodgers
surgeries, the Dodgers, including the Dodgers, and I believe you got to start in MLB with the Dodgers, and he's, you know, I was thinking, okay, pitching, you know, how is he a better pitcher? Has he changed his style? I was thinking, especially Tommy John, maybe he's a different pitcher, and. And essentially what he said is, he changed his focus. And I think this is something that happens, people eventually, or hopefully at some point, when you start playing professionally, or you start going out into the world, into society, in order to improve, you have to so much focus on what you are doing, mm-hmm. your own mistakes. And you have to, there's not, for many of us, there's not a lot of, and some of us are still there, there's not a lot of time for other people in that equation.
I gotcha.
But then,
and we hear that a lot.
To be your best, you have to focus on yourself. That having been said, at some point, you begin to realize that in order to be your best, you have to care for other people. And you have to help them out. And he talked about being, you know, how am I different? You know, I could hear this conversation, not so much in the words he said, but in maybe in his facial expression. It was, I was selfish, I didn't care about other people, and then I learned and I learned and I kept learning, and I realized that being a good teammate, being a good teammate is now a crucial part of who he is.
Mm-hmm.
And I got the, and of course, when he said that, it implied that it didn't used to be. But I think that's normal for a human being. You know, I think it's amazing when I see young people who are really involved in what other people are doing and trying to pick them up. But I thought about that. What a great lesson. And the other one was the unusual answer to what do you do with the Japanese slap hitters? And the answer is nothing. Said, you know, if they hit the ball, they're not going to do any damage, so why worry about it?
Yeah, I like what he said. They're, you know, they're not trying to do a lot of damage. You know, why should I make all these adjustments? And I guess what he's focused is not
make
worried
them adjust
about
to me.
Yeah, well, not worried about changing his entire game just because somebody's poking a hole in his mm-hmm. paper cup. You know, I can still drink out of it. It ain't Lincoln that bad.
Yeah, excellent analogy. And the other thing is, and the fact that it makes it a little easier in Japan when the fans have always got your back, your teammates have always got your back, and sometimes the front office has your back.
Hi.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, it's true. And it did seem like he had a lot of support. And the Giants are like that. And I think probably Scott Matheson is probably leading that charge in English for him among some of those teammates. Hey, man, that happens to everybody. Go get him tomorrow. You know, make sure your best outing is going to be your next one. So don't focus on your last one.
Yeah, I mean, there are people on that team, leaders on that team like Shinosuke Abe, who this is, you know, this is coming from talking with Scott for years, and also when Casey McGee was with the Giants, about how important Shinosuke Abe is to leading that team. He's not the captain anymore, but he's still the guy, he's still the elder statesman, the guy who people trust to say the right thing at the right time and to be positive and calm people the heck down.
Right, yeah. Yes, relax. Yeah, I get it. Okay, all right, well, if you're ready, let's make a transition and mm-hmm. talk about the Giants. Again, as mentioned, their six-game skid came to an end on Saturday. They beat the Swallows, and for that six-game skid, I guess the most important loss in there was the game in which they lost to the Dragons, and ace Tomoyuki Sugano didn't pitch well and lasted just two innings, gave up four runs. And, you know, this is a team, I think, knowing the team the way I do, I believe because I saw the guys, the guys on the bench go to the bullpen and start calling early on, I think they knew something was wrong and that Sugano wasn't 100%. yet they sent him out there anyway. And that concerns me because they didn't really need to send him out there. I don't know if it was Sugano who wanted to go out more so, or the team that wanted him to go out and try to tough it out. But they were quick to lift him. He gave up the four runs, as I said, one inning. It wasn't that he gave up two runs in the first inning and two in the second. He gave up four runs in the second inning, and he got out of trouble, and they got him out. So I joked with a Giants fan at the office who was complaining because he said, you know, since they got that magic number, they really haven't won any games. And I'm like, I don't think that's the case, but it probably seems that way. but okay, whatever. I still think you guys, you know, the Giants are in control, and I don't think there's that much to worry about. So, but they are using a lot of Shingo Ishikawa, Shunta Tanaka, and Akihiro Wakabayashi. You know, just unproven guys. Like, we've seen Kan Ohtake come out of the bullpen as like the ace middle reliever. It's just different. It's just different from what we're used to seeing. But I think they're rolling with the punches. I think some losses could be expected, and they're just finding their way as they get back in on track. And I just don't think they're going to get knocked off. But the way the Carp have been playing recently, I wouldn't be surprised if that next series with the Carp, they do suffer a few more losses than usual. But they've seen, you know, until this skid, they had been beating up on teams like the Dragons. And to lose three straight to the Dragons, I think really, really hurt, especially because they were supposed to be home games, and only the last one was played at Tokyo Dome physically. But the other games were regional games where they went out and played and home games away from Tokyo Dome. I think they're fine. You know, like I said, I just don't know why they would compromise or send a compromised Sugano out there to the mound like that. That was kind of perplexing for me personally.
Yeah, it was interesting because immediately after the game, Sugano's uncle, Tatsunori Hara, who happens to also be their manager,
yeah,
said there was an accident. Now, at what
point,
which made me curious. My guess is he had an issue, and he went out to the mound in the first inning, and he was really good in the first inning, and then came out in the second inning, and I'm guessing something happened in the process of the first inning that made the existing issue worse, and he tried to get through it, but what I saw in the second inning was just a horror show, because, I mean, Sukarno has decent command of his pitches. I mean, he has some pretty good pitches. They're not, I don't think any of his pitches are really, you know, plus, but he's got so many really good ones that he's really hard to bat against. And not only does he have really good, you know, good pitches, but his location is plus. His location is, you know, I'm gonna venture, let's say, a 70 on a 20 to 80 scale. His location is generally exceptional. Generally, you know, he'll throw his slider where he wants. He'll throw his sinker, two seam or one seam, whatever he's calling it this year, where he wants. He'll throw his four seam fastball where he wants. And he's just, because he has that pinpoint location, he's just so dangerous. And what I saw in the second inning was three pitches that, if you gave me enough swings, I could have hit.
What's enough swings?
I'm talking about really, really bad pitches. And the Dragons they didn't have to struggle. Now, I've seen good things from the Dragons in the last 2 weeks. But that was no proof. That was no proof of the good things, except that when he made mistakes, they really hit him. I mean, they hit him hard. There was no hesitation. Okay. So he basically, the first out he got was smoked. Then he gave up three hits that were all, I think he gave up two more hits that were absolutely, they were just no movement in dead center, little high in the strike zone. Bam, bam. And then he did get one out on a decent, he should have gotten one out on a decent pitch that was smoked too. Actually, it wasn't that good of a pitch, but it was smoked to first base, and he was, I think he thought it was going to right field because he was jogging to first. And
yeah, let's say late to cover, yeah.
And he was late to cover. So then, you know, things like that happened. So basically, every pitch, it wasn't like he had bad luck. I mean, you can give up four runs because every ball, you know, these timid little ground balls find holes.
Mm-hmm.
Or they don't get to the fielder in time, or they fall over the infield. But that was not the case. There was, like, no hiding the fact that he was really bad. So anyway, the next day he was deactivated with lower back pain. So I'm guessing something, he knew his situation was dicey, and at some point it got worse, and then they pulled him out after the second inning. Because but, you know, Sugano's interesting. He's had, as he said, he told me a year ago when he started the season poorly, he said he had been sick at the start of the season, and it affected his preparations.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't really game fit at the first two or three games, and he pitched poorly. And I'm guessing right now that he's going through some things, physical issues that he's trying to battle through.
Certainly.
And this affects how good Sugano is, really affects people's impression of how good the Giants' starting rotation is. Because if he's not winning, at least every other week, people think, wow, what happened to the Giants? And he's gotten beat up quite a bit.
Yeah, well,
Scott
again.
Matheson said that. He said, look, you know, look at what Sugano's doing. How can our rotation be good? Well, I'm sorry, Scott, but the Giants' rotation has been very good. The Giants' starting pitching has been very good this year.
Yes.
Yeah, well, I did look, and I thought, let's see. I think
it's certainly the deepest in the Central League in terms of production.
Yeah, I think terms of quality start percentage, they're 39%, which is tied for third with the SoftBank Hawks. The Carp are number one at 47%. The Tigers are number two at 41%. And in terms of their starter ERA, the Giants mm-hmm. are second behind the Carp. They have a 3.73. This is through Friday's game. I don't have Saturday's on here.
Okay.
3.73, the Carp lead NPB with 3.66. Their starters are 49-36.
Yeah, I was going to say their starters have a lot of wins, and I thought that was the biggest thing that you know, even with the problems Sugano has had and gone, I guess the lower back or whatever his injury this time is. I thought it was a leg this time, but. Because he was limping noticeably when he came out of the game. But the fact that he has 11 wins, Yamaguchi has 13 wins, and you go down the line, you've got two more CC Mercedes with 8 wins, and Toshiki Sakurai with 8 wins. So you said 49, and what was their loss total?
49-36.
Yeah, that's
pretty
good.
Which is not quite the best, but it's the second best. The Hawks are 49-35. And the Lions actually have the Cebu Lions with the second worst ERA and NPB for their starting pitchers at 4.89, have won 50 games.
Yeah.
Which is best in NPB. But that's,
let's not get into the Lions again yet, but yeah.
Exactly. That's kind of a
the hardest team in NPB to evaluate, yeah.
Exactly. It's hard to compare them to other people. There are little alienations that going on there. Okay, anyway, but the point wrap this up, is that Scott was, I think, tired of people blaming the Giants' bullpen. He'd like, people talk about the Giants' bullpen. It's the starters. Look at Sugano, he was saying. I think he had kind of reached a boiling point.
Yes.
He was kind of bubbling over. His argument does not have a lot of support over the course of the season. The Giants, through Friday, their middle relievers, which is the sixth and seventh inning, they are basically 11th in Japan in close games.
Okay.
And their late relievers are 11th in Japan in close in close games. They're 3-6. They have a 4.7. I mean, I don't really care about late relievers' ERA, but they have a 4.75 ERA.
Yeah.
You know, it's been ugly. It's been
they're not shutting it down.
Exactly. They've had, you know, they've had, got, I think what it is they've had really, really good performances and really, really bad ones. And enough bad ones to make, you know, to take a little bit of the shine off the good ones.
Right.
Although perhaps so, in actual games it hasn't cost them that much.
Well, it's, I think what I talked about last week is it's when you see a guy getting the job done, it's not as exciting sometimes as is a guy failing getting, and I'm talking about the pitchers, especially with among fans, when you see a guy fail, that's what you remember so much more than the successes, because it just makes a deeper impression, it seems to me. I think years ago, Michael Westbay talked about the snapshot effect and how just because he had an image of a particular pitcher not doing well, that was what he thought the pitcher was. But when he looked up the numbers, it wasn't as bad as he thought. But just because those snapshots stay with you and they're so deeply rooted once the trauma happens, it's hard to forget.
You know, relevant to that is that if you look at how often the best pitchers can prevent one run from scoring in an inning, it's about, let's say you bring your ace reliever in the ninth inning. Mm-hmm. Now, how many times can you expect him to protect a one-run lead?
Your ace reliever?
Okay.
Expect?
Yeah. Yeah, the fact is, or I shouldn't say the fact is, but the chances are he's going to blow it about a fifth of the time.
Okay, chances are.
Okay, because
that doesn't always happen. Yeah,
that's right. So that you can hear Johnny Mathison singing in the background there.
Chances are. Okay, gotcha.
Exactly. And that's based on winning. That's I'm glad you do, because that makes us both old. And the point being, that's based on win expectancy and runs allowed in different situations and what best relievers do. So the point is, it happens a lot. But when somebody gives up a one run, you know, blows a one run lead, people are pointing the finger at the closer, like, what did he do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's wrong with him?
I hear it a lot. You know, I see it a lot on Twitter.
Yeah, but as Ruby De La Rosa said, that's baseball. That stuff happens.
Exactly.
Get over it.
Exactly. All right. Well, let's get over.
Get over it, you guys.
Let's get over to the rest of the Central League while you're getting over that comment. And I thought last week on Wednesday was a really fun night of baseball in general. We had three walk-off homers that night, but. I'm looking at the Central League, and I'm looking at the push that the Bay Stars had been making until they ran. And I don't know if it's the case of the Dragons being hot, or things just really going well for them again, or a streak of luck, or just bad luck, bad circumstances for teams like the Giants and the Bay Stars in these first two games. I know they're going to start playing actually, what, in another 5 minutes that game is going to start in Japan time, but and hopefully they can avoid the Bay Stars can avoid the sweep at the hands of the lowly Dragons, who are going nowhere. These games, it's good. You know, I like to see these teams play hard and tough at the end, and I don't think these games, as I said earlier in the season, the teams are so closely matched in the first place. You still have to go out there and execute to win these games. And part of, I think, losing some of these games in the second half with these teams that are so far out of the playoffs that they don't have a chance is that normally they're so far out of the playoffs they don't have a chance. But realistically, the Dragons are out of it. But practically, so they're at 59 wins as their game is about to start here in 3 minutes. And the Hiroshima Carp have 65. That's just 6 wins away. So it's not inconceivable. It just isn't likely.
The Dragons are not out of the pennant race.
They're not completely out.
They're out of the pennant race, but they're not out of the playoff picture yet.
They're still in the playoff picture.
And you asked that question, is it luck? And I think it is luck in the sense that I have been for one reason or another, I've watched probably more Dragons games in the last 2 weeks than I had the first 5 months of the season.
I think because they've been playing. Yeah, they've been playing some of the top teams, so they've been. They played the Swallows, and so that was the battle to stay out of last place. And then they went to the Giants, and now they're playing the Bay Stars. And I think those are
right. And they're playing at home. And the other thing is because they play the weekend. And I think the other thing is I'm at the office on the weekend, mm-hmm. and they were playing day games. And when somebody plays day games, it means I get that one. That day game out as the first game of the day, mm-hmm. and then we add on to it just because the workload at night can be really heavy. So what's happened is I've seen more of the Dragons. Anyway, to move beyond that inane stuff, what mm-hmm. I've seen and what I think my opinion about this is that where it's luck is it's luck in that it's good timing. I don't think it's luck in that they're playing well. I think it's luck that they're pitching well and hitting well at the same time, because they have the game I saw yesterday, when I saw the Dragons just lighting up the Swallows.
I think it was a cocktail. Cocktail the other day, for sure.
Oh, excuse me. Lighting up, yeah, Taiga Kamichitani. Normally what I think when a pitcher gives up four runs in an inning is, or I think it was three runs in that inning, but when I see it, my first thought is, the pitcher's doing something wrong. You know, that's generally, the pitcher's throwing, you know, I mean, not quite as bad as Tomoyuki Sugano was, but the pitcher's making mistakes, too many mistakes. But what I saw in Saturday's game was not that. I mean, I saw, you know, marginal mistakes, but what I saw was really, really good at-bats from the Dragons. So it was... You know, typically what happens in the sports reporting is when, like, after the Dragons beat up Tomoyuki Sugano, the guy said, oh, we had good at-bats. And I'm thinking, well, yeah, good. But you were facing, you know, you were playing T-ball. And but against Kamichitani, it wasn't like that. Okay, sure, he shouldn't have thrown a two-strike splitter in the strike zone. You know, he should have been 3 inches below the strike zone, you know, to get a swing and miss. But
correct, yeah.
But Nobuasa Fukuda, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Nobuasa Fukuda was like going, and he didn't, it wasn't a beautiful swing, but he got it off the end of the bat. He was ready for it. He was ready for it. He hit it off the end of the bat, and he hit it pretty hard. I mean, he drove that pitch pretty well. I mean, it wasn't a picture-perfect double. But it was a good swing, and I saw a bunch of good swings. I saw a bunch of quality at bats, and I've been impressed with. Now last week I said I didn't see any didn't see any material difference between the quality of the Dragons and the Bay Stars and the Tigers, and so I was kind of glad to see the Dragons play well after I kind of stuck my neck out for that. So that's the Dragons team I've seen. I think that's. I did say that I think the Bay Stars were a bit over their heads, but I don't think that was the reason that was happening. I think they kind of ran into a little Dragon buzzsaw.
Yeah, I think they did get hot a little bit, but I started to think this week that we saw enough separation that I'm satisfied that we're looking at the current top three teams as the teams that are going to be in the playoffs. It's just a matter of what order and who wins the pennant and who has a breakdown. But I do like the way the Giants look going into a playoff series. I think they still, to me, look like the strongest team.
Sure.
Because they have the deepest starting pitching to go into a playoff situation.
And what I would say to that, or I would comment on what you said earlier, we're still seeing all these guys. We're still seeing, you know, the Giants, Hara is treating it like he is a really cool customer. You know, mm-hmm. he's in the, you know, it's like he's not saying, oh, geez, we need to win these games. We need to, you know, we can't afford to not win the pennant. So we've got to play our best players all the time. He's given guys their first starts in NPB. Letting all these guys who play well in the farm team come out. And he's being Hara. So he's playing.
Yeah, but they ran they ran his nephew out there the other day when they probably knew something was already wrong with him. So, I see that, and I see that too. I see what you're saying, and I see the Sugano situation as well. But let's move on to the Pacific League. Mm-hmm. And I also agree that in that league we're looking at the top two teams for certain, the SoftBank Hawks and the Cebu Lions. And again, they're the most volatile, unpredictable, against-the-grain team I think I've seen in Japanese baseball since I've been watching. So that's since 91. And I don't know. I can't predict anything they're going to do. It seems one day they get the starting pitching performance that you think they can't get. The next day they're down by a bunch of runs and you think the game might be over. Of course, you think they do have a lot of power and they still get guys on base, and lo and behold, they do make a comeback and they come back from a big deficit and win that game. And the next day they play a tight game that's like 4-2 and they get the key hits late in the innings, you know, 7th, 8th, 9th innings, and they win the game. I don't know what to think about this team, but I know I'm not going to pick against it anymore. I don't know that I'm going to say that these guys are going to win the Pacific League pennant, but when they get into the playoffs, anything can happen. And I don't think the other teams, unless SoftBank gets back all its guys and they're really hot, that they're that much better than the Lions, that they're just going to beat them because they're better, because anything can happen. Baseball is crazy.
I was waiting for that one. First of all, my advice to you is stop thinking about the Lions, period.
What?
Just watch
Why?
And enjoy.
Oh, watch and enjoy, I see.
Because you don't know what to think about them, so you're just they're confusifying you.
So, mass confusification everywhere.
Give yourself a mental health break and stop worrying about the Lions. Just enjoy them for what they are.
Okay.
The Hawks, I agree with you. The Hawks are not so much better that in their current state, which is, trying to win a four-man tug of war with three guys, mm-hmm. that they're really that much better. I think they do have an amazing amount of talent. And when I watch these guys come back, I know Tsuyoshi Wada is, I think he's still dealing with whatever issues sidelined him in June, in July.
I agree, although I did not get to see that game that he lost, very close game.
I didn't see it either. I did not see much of it. But I'm not, he's not as, his command isn't there. And his control isn't there. When his control isn't there, he's got nothing, He's getting the bottom of the barrel and trying to get people out on guile, which he always does, but with more, he's got to pull out all the stopper. He's got to go buy extra guile and gumption or something somewhere to get by with that stuff he's got right now.
Right.
But I love him. And Kodai Senga had gone through a stretch where he'd lost three straight starts, and his catcher, Takuya Kai, said, oh, he was losing even when he was pitching well. And I wanted to say, well, okay, yeah, but if you pitch really well in the second and third inning, it doesn't really matter if you pitch terribly in the fourth and fifth. Although, to be fair, mm-hmm. he was having those innings he was having a lot of those innings where he gave up a lucky hit. He made one mistake, and then he gave up a lucky hit, and there was an error. And so I'll go with he was pitching well. He had one game when he wasn't pitching well, and he was he didn't have good location, which has been his principal problem this season, is falling behind in counts sometimes and getting really high pitch counts and so on and mm-hmm. so on. So, but yes, so he's really been really good. But the Hawks are again doing the Giants thing, and geez, look, we got Kenichi Nakata. Wow, is he still on our team? Let's use him.
Oh, yes. I saw they dusted him off or dug him up or
exactly.
whichever.
Exactly. So
maybe
probably
both.
Somebody in the front office said, wait, I thought we got rid of this guy. Let's get him on the team. Wait. Oh, okay. That's what he was doing. So I think he's back on the farm team now. But
thank you, sir. We do not want another.
Well, could be expected, sure. And Yukiya Nagita's back, and which is always good. And the other guy I want to comment on is Akira Nakamura. Mm. This guy is like, he's just, I think he got better on the farm this year while he was battling his nerve disorder, and then he had another physical ailment. And he looks really, really sharp. I mean, I'm just watching his at-bats. And I guess that happens when you see people get hits. But, boy, he has been creaming every mistake anybody makes, anything that looks like a mistake.
Okay.
If it smells like a mistake, you know, by the time you realize it, it's already lined into center for a hit.
Right. Bet's already on it, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, I haven't actually been able to see any game since I left on Friday, but I've seen a lot of highlights. I did not see any of his. But in terms of the league and the overall race, we see Lotte, obviously they're, what is it? They're half game ahead of Rakuten as play begins today on Sunday. But I'm glad they've climbed up into that playoff spot. I don't know if they can hold it, but I think that's going to be compelling to watch that. But I do think the Fighters with the big skid they experienced, and the Buffaloes with the Buffaloes being a, Buffaloes with a L-O-W-S at the end, we can rule them out of a playoff spot. So I think these four teams, and most likely Lotte and Rakuten battling for that last playoff spot, it looks like.
Well, Lotte,
should be fun.
Let's see. Oryx has to make up 5+ games in their 17 that are remaining. So that's kind of tough. And I think it's also very tough for Nippon Hand.
I'm ruling them out. I ruled them out after a couple weeks, but I'm really officially ruling them out now.
Okay, which means next time John rules somebody out, don't actually think he's ruling them out until he officially rules.
Yeah, it's got to be official. Well, of course. Yeah, it's got to be official.
Okay.
Nothing's
don't
official
until
it's officially
official.
Don't jump
the gun on John. He's
official.
Still thinking about Cebu or something. Okay.
With the official seal of officialness.
So that makes it four. That makes it basically a four-way race for third, a three-way race for third. Although I don't think Lotte's going to catch. As you said, I think they got 5 games to catch the Lions, so I think they're out of second. So, but yeah, first two Hawks and Lions, and then Rakuten or Lotte, which I'm glad to see. Although Lotte's been perhaps the most frustrating team I've watched this year, because I mean, it's like they're a difficult team. You know, we've been challenged to figure out what they do all year. I mean, every time we talk about Lotte, it's like, well, why aren't they better or why aren't they worse? We don't really, they're like the Lions. I think they should be. You know, I look at the guys and I think, well, they shouldn't be as good as they are, but they shouldn't be as bad as they are either. I don't know. That doesn't make sense. Let's just skip that part.
Yeah, it does.
But anyway, they're
exactly
confounded. They've
the
been
case.
Confounding me.
And confounded. That's the word I was going to come up with here. Because they have gone through stretches where they pitched well, and they've gone through stretches where they've batted well, but they had not been able to put both together to be consistently good. They've just been frustrating. So confounding is a great word, and
okay.
But I think
Rakuten is the same. Rakuten went through a horrible.
No, they were really good early, and they just have been marginal since. I think they've been winning
again,
enough games to stay relevant in the chase, but not take off.
Yeah, there are things about Rakuten that I think the fact that Zelis Wheeler isn't there. He isn't there. Being a big contributor right now is probably my biggest concern about them. I think they really need him in there. Of course, Jabari Blash is making people forget how to spell Zelis Wheeler's name. But
yeah, at times, that's true.
Yeah, but pitching's, I mean, good pitch. Yeah, those two, maybe we should merge those two teams and just call them the Confounders or something, Lotte and Rakuten.
All right. All right, making a four-seam transition, let's talk about Kodai Senga with the return to Senga. The return to Senga.
We'll have to put you in Sendai.
I'll be singing that song the whole time. Return to Sendai. He became the first pitcher in the franchise in 76 years to throw a no-hitter on Friday when he blanked the Lotte Marines.
The other no-hitter wasn't on Friday? the one on May 26, 1943 was not on a Friday?
I'll look that up, but I do not know.
Okay. Takehiko Basho threw one for the Nankai Hawks in May 20, 6th, 1943.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for looking that up. So, yeah, it was 2-0 at home against the Lotte Marines at Fukuoka Yafuoku Dome. And 2-0 again was the score. He's the first pitcher to be drafted as a developmental player to throw a no-no. And I also noticed that he threw to Kai, also a developmental player. So there was a developmental battery. So that has to be the first developmental battery to complete a no-hitter.
These were two guys who were not drafted in the NPB draft. They were taken after everybody said, we've had enough. And then they said, okay, let's go to the guys that ain't going to cost you any money. So Senga was taken in the fourth round of the October 2010 developmental draft, which made him about, I think I looked it up one time, there's about 13 people in NPB who were drafted after him. And one of those was Takuya Kai, who was the Japan Series MVP last year, who caught this game.
Wow. Yeah, so that's just great for the developmental guys to look up to that. And I loved Senga's hero interview. I'm not sure if you saw it or not, but they asked him, when did you notice you hadn't allowed a hit? Now, normally we get, I wasn't paying much attention to that. I wasn't thinking about that. I was just trying to get the next batter and blah, 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 blah. Or some guy said, maybe about the eighth inning. Yeah, they lie. Senga was so honest. He was blunt. He said, hey, I realized in the fifth inning, and I wanted to go out and throw the last four innings and, without giving up a hit and get the thing. And I thought that was awesome. I thought that was one of the most awesome statements I've heard in a long time from a Japanese player on the podium. Because, they're just basically, they have a boilerplate of quotes that they just send out to us every time.
Yep.
And, this was not one of them.
I've had... heard some of my definitely the best hero interviews I've ever heard this year, and one of the things, now this, they did talk about this, and this is relevant because Senga's at the ninth inning. I was thinking, the no hitter's done because he walked the first two batters to open the ninth inning, and it was a good no hitter. I know John likes to say you pretty much need a good defensive play to get a no hitter, but
well, they're usually, you need one seems to come.
Yeah, generally. Yeah. I think you do need good defensive plays because nobody's that good, generally. But it was, he needed kind of above, maybe a couple of above average players, but nothing sensational. Anyway, moving along, ninth inning, he walks the first two guys, and then
he walked four in the game total, so yes. Yeah, he walked two guys in the ninth.
Yeah, he walked four, and he hit somebody. And he walked the first two guys to open the ninth. He gets it close to a double play ground ball, but doesn't get it. He's got one out and runners on the corners. And then he gets a pop-up, and then he's got Seiya Inoue, the Marines' big first baseman, slugging first baseman. And until the pop-up, until there were runners on the corners, he looked a little rattled. Mm-hmm. But when it came two outs, by the time there was the pop-up came, you could see he was back in business. He was open; his pitching skills were open for business again. And they decided they had to talk about, there was a conversation about what pitch to throw. And they'd been talking, they went out to the mound. And Kai said, when we get to this, when we get to a certain point, what are we going to throw? And the thing is, apparently there was some thought that maybe try just basically work on fastballs, because his fastball was his best pitch. It was just electric. It had good run on it. He topped out at 98.8 miles an hour, 159 kilometers per hour.
Okay.
And there was some think, well, let's just do fastballs. And basically, which would be the best thing perhaps to get a no-hitter. Now, the reason this is relevant is because in Japan, a no-hitter is only part of the equation. They don't count a no-hitter in Japan unless you also throw a shutout.
Okay, so yeah, the no-hit, no-run.
It has to be a no-hit, no-run. So, for example, had there been a wild pitch,
Correct.
Had there been a wild pitch, the runner would have scored, and the Japanese no-hit shutout would have been out the tubes, and nobody would even remember it.
Mm.
Even if, you know, even if he then struck out Seiya Inoue and ended the game. So they needed, basically, they threw a forkball, and Kai said, okay, we're going to throw him the forkball. I'll block it if it's in the dirt. And it wasn't. It was a beautiful pitch. It was out of the zone, and Inoue was just flustered. He got worked over, pitched him in, pushed him back off the plate, and then got him swinging at a forkball outside to end the game. It was a work of art that was worthy of the best.
And
now, both of the and the other thing about that game is that both of the Hawks' runs were courtesy of Leonis Martin,
the
Marine center fielder. He basically both of the runs were unearned, and both one of them in the build up to the Hawks' first run scoring in the fifth inning was Martin dropped a routine. A can of corn in medium deep center field. It just hit off.
Martin with the routine. You know, okay.
Yeah, that's right. He's normally the right fielder, but he was playing center field that day with Takashi Ogino out. And he dropped, it just hit. It's like he tried to make a basket catch almost and hit off the glove of his hand, of his glove, hit off the heel of his glove.
Gotcha.
And then the next inning, with a runner on first and two outs, same thing happened, same play, different batter. Seichu Chikawa scored from first when another ball hit off the heel of his glove in medium deep center field. So both of the runs came off of that. And now here's the thing. After that happened, one of the Hawks, Oendon, one of their cheering groups, and there are many, they're like little clubs and they're all registered, one of them started chanting, "Way to go, Martin," way in Japanese. "Way to go, Martin. Way to go to Martin. Hawks hit it up the middle."
Right.
And
hit it to center. Hit it to center.
That. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And, well, anyway, they were, I'm guessing, the other cheer groups and the team were not happy with them. So the cheering group issued an apology to the player. The Hawks issued an apology to the Marines, saying it's that we apologize for, you know, we try to uphold the highest standards of sportsmanship, and we apologize and we will try to be better. And I'm thinking, first of all, I thought, how dumb, because who cares? And fans are going to say, as a former real loudmouth fan, used to terrorize outfielders who made mistakes at Candlestick Park in San Francisco.
We'll forget that. That was back in the 70s.
Yeah, a long time ago. So anyway, I've gotten over it. Okay, so I'm thinking, okay, yeah, who cares? But on the second thought, I thought, how Japanese? You know,
it's
a big deal about nothing. But then on the third thought, I thought, how cool.
You kept thinking, stop that.
I know.
Yeah, how cool.
Well, I'm not thinking about the Lions. I'm allowed. Okay. So but finally, I realized how cool and how mature that is. I mean, it's not typical boorish fan behavior, but it's the behavior, as I was saying to John before, it's the behavior of the Japan fans at the World Cup in Russia or Germany or South Africa, picking up the garbage that other fans left after the game.
Okay.
You know, it's good behavior, and I want to applaud that.
It is nice, and it's a good gesture, because it's not that bad a thing, to be honest. I think I've heard worse.
Yeah, and indeed. Yeah, Deanna could tell you stories about worse. So, and the next day, the Marines got theirs back. Leonis Martin hit a two-run home run that clinched Yuji Nishino's first career shutout. He threw a four-hitter.
He's a veteran pitcher, so yeah, I was surprised.
Yeah, he's a veteran
imagine
pitcher
my face.
Who spent most of his life I think he's an 8-year veteran, and he spent 7 of those years as a reliever.
Reliever, yeah. Amazing. Amazing. I kept looking, and I kept watching that game and seeing the scores. I was busy. I wasn't in a place where I could really watch, but I did see the score. I kept saying, well, geez, did who came in relief, because this is such a close game. And when I saw that Nishino had pitched it and finished it out, I was flabbergasted. But we got to move on.
Two
more
great
to talk
games
about.
And a lot of fun, and good manners in Fukuoka. So yeah, more tone.
Okay.
More power
okay.
to them.
All right, making a two-seam transition, we have another segment, which I like to call the Wild Wild West Bay segment. And I recently scoffed at the notion of the magic number in NPB appearing and disappearing. Michael West Bay took it upon himself to explain its use.
I heard that scoffing. Or was that scuffing?
It's a little of both.
Okay.
You know me, I'll do it all. All of the above. So here's Michael West Bay's explanation of the magic number in Japan.
Hey there, John, Jim, and all you fans. Michael here. John had mentioned on last week's show that it was mysterious how the magic number would appear and disappear. Well, as Arthur C. Clarke once said, any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. Let me pull back the curtain and reveal the math behind the magic number. As of August 31st, the Giants led the Central League over the Bay Stars by 5 games. The number of games behind is really not important. What is important is the number of games that the Bay Stars and the Giants face each other. As of the end of August, that is 6 games. The next number that we need to have is the number of games remaining. For the Giants, that was 22 games remaining, and the Bay Stars only 19. Taking the wins, losses, and ties into account, for the Bay Stars, should they manage to go 19-0 from September 1st through the rest of the season, that will give them a winning percentage of .593. For the Giants to be better than that, they only have to go 16-6 for a .596 winning percentage. So the Giants' magic number was 16, and the Bay Stars could do nothing about that without help from another team defeating the Giants. And that help did come in the form of the Hanshin Tigers defeating the Giants 2-0 on the 1st, while the Bay Stars defeated the Carp 3-2 that very same evening. The Giants' magic number of 16 did not change because of that. However, the neon light displaying that magic number turned off. Why is that? Well, as I mentioned before, if the Bay Stars win the remaining games, they will have a winning percentage of .593. With 6 games remaining against the Giants, that would also assume that the Giants have lost 6. With 6 losses, that would give them a maximum of 15 wins and a .589 winning percentage, now below the Bay Stars. So in this case, the Bay Stars are in control of their own destiny. They no longer have to rely on another team to defeat the Giants in order to take the title. I know that going 18-0 for the rest of the season is not very probable, but so long as the Bay Stars can hold even with the Giants during games which they do not face each other and defeat the Giants with the 6 games remaining, the Bay Stars do control their own destiny. And that's the magic number.
Okay, so basically, yeah, you've got a magic number, and it's, as Jim will tell you right now, I think we just think of it differently. I know the magic number, actually there's a magic number that every team starts with in the major leagues or in across the ocean. On day one, you need X number of games to clinch a pennant, or I'm sorry, a division. And that's not the way they think about it here. And so thank you for that explanation. But I still don't like the idea of the number appearing and disappearing, because it still actually exists in my head. It's just different from what people have here. So I know you have an explanation of how it's maybe conceived differently or treated differently here in NPB.
Yeah, in Japan, they treat it like it is an equation in either side, but in Japan, there's an additional part to the equation, which is they don't give you a magic. The magic number requires that none of your wins come against the team with the next best winning, the team with the second best chance to win the pennant.
Mm-hmm.
Your closest competitors.
Right.
So what happens is when you need to, there's something about Japan, and I know I'm sounding a little bit like Michael Westbay almost in my intonation. I may be mocking him subconsciously, but there's something in Japan that says you have to do it on your own. You know, you have to do it on your own because they make a big deal about being able to clinch the pennant without getting help from other teams.
Right, on your own power, of your own volition.
Yeah, on your own power, doing it on your own. Okay, so basically the magic number requires you to do it without somebody, without having to beat the next team in head-to-head. So it's they carry that to that degree. Anyway, and the thing about it is that it's treated like it's a physical law in Japan. You know, mm-hmm. It appears, it disappears. There's no in-between. You have a magic number or you don't have a magic number. The Giants don't have a magic number, although they did. Because in the Japanese rules, it does not exist. I mean, we know it's there under the surface. We can see it. We can count it. But for Japanese fans, it might as well be on Mars. It might as well be 100. and then one day it's not there, and the next day, I mean, I haven't counted the Giants' magic number since it disappeared after it was 18, but my guess is it's probably down to about 12 now. So it went from it being 18 to, you know, 12. If it appears today, it'll be 11 perhaps.
if we see it along the horizon there.
But exactly, but they treat it like it's a scientific property. You know, it's like Einstein invented it, you know, or discovered it. You know, it's something, it's part of the laws of physics because it's treated with reverence in Japan. It's amazing.
All right. Well, again, we've got a lot more to get to, so bye-bye magic number. See you when you come back.
Good. Yeah, let's get rid of the damn things.
All right, let's make a seamless transition and talk about the players of the month. In the Central League, let's be brief. Who do you have? I think I'm going to go with Chris Johnson of the Carp as the pitcher, and I'm just lost about the hitters. Diane Biciedo?
Well, yeah, the hitters in the Central League are pretty tough. I think basically we got four guys, and they're gonna, I don't know what, hold a home run derby or something maybe. I've got Diane Biciedo, Seiya mm-hmm. Suzuki, Munetaka Murakami, and Kazuma Okamoto. All are worthy. Whoever gets it, more power to you.
I'm going to say Biciedo because he hit .381, but I'm going to bet it's someone like Murakami because he's been sensational recently. And
And he set the record, too. He set the record for teenage home runs.
Right. He's got a record to go with it, and he's Japanese.
Although he might have hit that in September, so maybe that won't count. Maybe he'll win the MVP in September because he set the record. Who knows?
Okay.
As for the pitcher, I've got Shota Imanaga.
Yes.
3-0, 1.44 ERA, 1.12 WHIP. I thought David Buchanan would do it. David Buchanan was close, 3-0, 1.64 ERA, but I think I'd go with Imanaga.
Okay, not Chris Johnson.
No.
Okay. In the Pacific League, who are you going with? I'll let you go first.
Zach Neal, I think, will win the Lions Pitcher of the Month award.
Hands down, because he hasn't lost.
Yeah, well, he was one of three Lions pitchers who were 3-0 in August. The other being Kona Takahashi and reliever Ryuya Ogawa. I can't believe I said that.
Yeah.
But
I think his was the most productive
one.
Yes.
And another guy who also is worth mention was Tatsushi Masuda. 7 saves, 1 hold, 10 games, 11 pitch, 13 strikeouts, and a 1.00 WHIP. So wow. Those guys, especially Masuda and Neil, are both deserving. But you know what happens when starting pitchers go 3-0. They win the award. Okay.
Right, right. And the hitter?
Tomoya Mori.
Yeah, I'm looking at the 10 home runs, and I'm thinking if you put that alongside 377, you're going to get it. And although Masataka Yoshida
led in RBIs, and nobody cares that he led in OPS or slugging average or runs scored.
Yeah, he's been a monster. I didn't notice all that, but I just remember Takuya Nakamura having such a great month. So, yeah, probably Mori. Well, you're right.
Takuya Nakamura is already won the September Player of the Month award.
Yes, that's true too. That is true as well. All right, sounds good. Let's go to fielding questions. All right, this comes from our buddy Glenn in Tokyo, and he said, and he sent this question in, I think, about 10 days ago. So apologies for the late reply, but he says, if I understood the Japanese news correctly, Carp slugger Xavier Bautista got a 6-month ban for doping. Now, I don't want to dive too deep into this, but does the investigation end there? Does NPB not wonder how or where he got the alleged substance? I find it hard to imagine that he, as a non-Japanese person, was able to get whatever he was allegedly using without the possible knowledge slash help of someone connected with the world of NPB slash trainers slash Japanese speakers slash farm team officials. So, his final question is, additionally, what is the attitude of the Japanese press toward this kind of thing? So, let's go back and break this down. He's got a bunch of questions in there. I don't want to dive too deep into this thing, but does the investigation end there? And I just don't think we've heard about investigations into former players who have been who have tested positive for drugs and have had subsequent punishments for those tests. They've just been bounced out of NPB. This is an exceptional thing that we're seeing here with just the 6-month ban and the fact that the team didn't act as harshly as immediately terminating the contract. And we haven't seen much of that at all. We're just not really seeing much of any action. So I find the whole thing strange.
Yeah, well, it is. However, to answer the question specifically, no, I don't. I think, do they wonder? Yes, I'm sure people at NPB are going, where is he taking this? And I'm sure most of them are thinking, let's see, he's from the Dominican Republic. Okay, do we have to ask any more? We see this happen because such drugs are more freely available in the Dominican Republic than they would be in Japan, and people can get them. What I've heard is, as we said last week, players don't get tested a lot. The other thing about this is the drug he took. Now, the question is why he only got a 6-month suspension, and NPB's answer was, well, we didn't catch him taking steroids. We didn't catch him taking performance-enhancing drugs. He took a female fertility drug, which steroid users use to alleviate the symptoms of performance-enhancing drugs.
Okay.
And that's why he was busted. So he was taking because he wasn't actually, it's sort of like, we didn't actually see you kill the guy, but you had the smoking gun and the bullet from your gun was in his body and there was nobody else within a mile. So we're going to kind of assume that you did it, but we didn't see you kill him. So we're not going to charge you with murder.
Well, I don't know about that. Maybe the smoking gun was in the same room. You were the last person to see that. I don't know. Because that right there, when you explained it, is very much a guilty verdict. So, I see where you're going.
It's like, basically, he took a drug that has one use. And they're saying, well, we didn't see you use the drug that requires you to take this one, so we'll just assume you took it wrong. You know, if somebody, you took the wrong medicine. Maybe his wife's trying to get pregnant. I don't know. And he took it
right. And as far as this, I don't know about that either.
Well, he said he didn't know how he took it, so I'll assume. Yeah.
Okay. your mouth. Anyway, look, as far as MPB and the trainers and Japanese speakers and the farm team officials, I don't know that people are can it, that it's even possible for all those entities collectively to monitor the behavior and actions and to monitor what another player or another person is taking and how they're getting it. And I just don't think that's feasible. Yeah. So that to me, I understand where you're coming from in that someone should know that maybe he's taking something. If this is, for example, a masking agent, then he's taking something to enhance the performance. But he's a good player. So
Well, that's, and that goes to the other thing, which is why is he still on the rolls? Is usually the answer in Japan is, if you do something wrong, then you're gone, you're finished, unless you're a good player, in which case we need to be careful. So we've seen that numerous times in Japan. We have the world number two badminton player who was visiting a casino, which is illegal, and the other people on his team who visited a casino that were illegal basically all got run out of the sport. This guy was back in 1 year, and he's now the number one badminton player in the world. We saw that with Kyosuke Takagi of the Yomiuri Giants. A bunch of guys bet on baseball, but only one of them was actually a good player.
And he's back.
A good player got a one-year suspension, is now back.
That's true.
Now, Yafet Amador is kind of an interesting case, but he was an older player, and they were probably thinking, well, maybe without the drugs, he's not going to be a good player or something, because he was not asked back. He was basically banished, and it was a one-year suspension he got. But Xavier Batista, on the other hand, is a proven quality. And he's, I believe, how old is Xavier Batista? He's 27.
I think he was that young. And he's been with the organization for...
Yeah, for a number of years. And so I think the Carp are going, I think they're thinking, well, yep, let's keep him around. So they're going to give him another chance. Now, as far as the suspension goes, he cannot participate in spring training games. He's not allowed to now work at Carp facilities, although I believe that will not prevent him from working out at the Carp Academy in the Dominican Republic.
Okay.
He's not allowed in any NPB facilities, but that's different. He will be allowed to begin using the Carp facilities 1.5 months before his suspension ends, which I believe is it'll be March 2nd. So the middle of February, he'll be able to start working out. He won't be able to play any games, but he's going to miss the first half of spring training and then just be probably with the team or probably with a minor league team because they can't use him. And he'll probably be working out and training with the minor league team.
Okay. So, he joined the Carp Academy in the Dominican in 2014 and then was a developmental player the following year, 2015. So he's been with the team a lot of times. And again, I mentioned that he did not fit the profile. He's the second player to have tested positive for drugs this year. Joey Meneses of Oryx earlier in the summer was the first, but we've seen with these other players that they've been bounced pretty quickly afterwards. So
most of them were either already older or unproven and unproductive.
Correct. And so Glenn also asked, lastly, he said, additionally, what is the attitude of the Japanese press toward this kind of thing? And I know that I speak for a lot of them because I've seen the faces and they frown on this kind of behavior. Certainly they frown upon it, but I think, and from the way I've seen the stories be phrased and written, I think he's a sympathetic figure for some reason, Batista is. And whether whether it's because he's such a friendly guy and so likable and that he's been here. Most of the other guys, other than Rick Gutterson, hadn't been here that many years. I think Amador was in his third year, perhaps, maybe his fourth year. But
most of the other guys were first-year guys.
And so he had really established himself as a personality, as an entity, as a brand, if you will. And so
a real human being.
Yeah, he seems more of a sympathetic figure. And so I think, and because it wasn't some, it was a, I want to call it a masking agent. I'm not sure what to call it, but I just think they have this rapport with him. Most of them have covered him, and I see the stories and the wording to be not as harsh as I saw in the past with the others.
I think the other issue is that the revelations after Kazuhiro Kiyohara
mm-hmm.
came out and said that, yeah, he was, that other Japanese players were using, you know, during his era, the suggestion that other Japanese players were using bands that, well, they weren't banned at the time, but they were using, for, you know, different kinds of drugs. Basically, and he was introduced by drugs by a guy who got banned in the major league, in the minor league, in the U.S. For performance-enhancing drugs. And the idea that these things are happened to Japanese players as well, I think prevented the mass outcry of foreigners are all troublemakers, which is a typical response to this.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's part of it, the fact that these people are human, the fact that foreigners are getting busted and the Japanese aren't, and at least one player has suggested that's because the testing, as I said last week, the testing system in Japan is a joke, and that players are rarely tested. And so it's like, as I mentioned somewhere, that it's essentially like the replay, it's like the video review where they give the umpires monitors that are so small that are essentially impossible to actually see the plays and call it a video review system. So they've got a drug testing system in which essentially nobody is drug tested.
And yet we still get only foreigners. But anyway, yeah, we've talked about this. So yeah, thank you very much, Glenn, for that excellent question. We have a couple more, but we'll limit it to one more with a question from David Saba, who tweeted us. And he said, I'm on the Takuya Nakamura for MVP train. You guys all aboard? I wanted to say that.
Hey, David, Jim. John's the conductor on that train.
Dude, I was going to say, I've practically been driving that train for a while now. I'm not sure if you've been listening, but yeah, I made it from scratch. I built the tracks, hard labor. I've been out there.
Yeah, it's actually, you can go see it. You can go see it if you go out.
I've been tooting this horn.
That's right, the Shakuji Koen. You can see that train. It's running around
the park. That's right. It goes around in a little circle around the pond out there.
Indeed. So
all aboard. Well, yes, I'm all aboard.
Well, he's had this. Yeah, he had this marvelous week. I mean, it's worth mentioning. He had a week in a span of, I think it was four games. It might have been three, in which he hit a grand slam, a three-run double, and another grand slam. And after the grand slam, he says, "I can't really believe this keeps happening to me." He said after, and when he came up with the bases loaded, he said, "Like I was half laughing. I thought again." This can't be real.
Well, if he was thinking that, imagine what the pitchers and the opposing manager were thinking. So,
indeed.
All right, excellent questions. Thank you very much, guys. Anyone else that has a question, we'll try to get to it next week. Hit us up at JBW Podcast on Twitter with the hashtag #HighHeat. Send questions by email to yakyujohn@gmail.com, and you can go to our Facebook page and leave us a comment there. Check out Jim's work on jballallen.com, and we will talk to you next week. Actually, Jason Koskrey is going to be sitting in for me next week, so I won't be talking to you next week, but Jason's going to fill in admirably, I'm sure. Jim will lead the way, so they will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballpark.